Well, we're going to be going back into the hard sayings of Jesus as we've been talking about the last several weeks. We live in a world that is driven by policy and procedures. We have national policy. We have church policies. We have school policies. We have policies upon policies. We have policies to figure out how we're going to have policies. We live in a world of policies and procedures. We live in a world of rules and regulations. And don't get me wrong, we need rules to govern us. We need regulations to govern our lives to a certain degree. But how we use rules and regulations is far from what the intended purpose is oftentimes. While we live in a world full of rules and regulations, we use those rules and regulations to tell us exactly how far we can go. Or, conversely, we use rules and regulations to tell us how little we can do. Just enough to get by on the job or in school or wherever the case might be. We live in a world that says, that's not my job. That's not my responsibility. We live in a world that says, I will go this far, but that's as far as I will go. To go any further is somebody else's responsibility. Interestingly enough, Jesus lived in the very same world. Rules and regulations are nothing new to humanity. He came, while he lived in the same world, he came not to conform to that world, but to transform that world and to transform our world as well. As we've been studying some of the famous sayings of Jesus this morning, we're going to look at several of the sayings because they're stacked on top of each other. Sayings such as, turn the other cheek, go the second mile, love your enemies, and perhaps the hardest of all, be perfect, just as your Father in heaven is perfect. And perhaps you've heard many of those sayings, or maybe this is the first time you've heard any of them. They are all part of Jesus's teaching on the Sermon on the Mount, given very early on in his teaching ministry. And I think it was by God's design that Jesus taught these issued these sayings early on in his ministry, because it was how he lived his ministry. He preached the Sermon on the Mount at the front end of his ministry, and then for 3.5 years, he demonstrated what he taught. If you go through the Sermon on the Mount, you can see that lived out in his life all the way up to the cross. So he gave it as an example. It wasn't just dry teaching like you get on Sunday morning from your pastor sometimes. It was demonstrated in how he lived out his life. And I pray that it would be demonstrated as I live out my life. But not only are they famous sayings sometimes, but they are hard sayings. Turn the other cheek. Love your enemies. Go the second mile. Those are hard sayings, but they are not impossible sayings. They are sayings that went against the standard policies and procedures of the day. And they are sayings that go against the standard policies and procedures of our day as well. You see, the religious leaders of Jesus' day had spirituality and had following God and being a good citizen. They had it down to a fine art. They knew exactly what they should and should not do. They could tell you exactly what it meant to love God. They could tell you exactly what it meant to love your neighbor. And this is what it meant right in here and only right in here. They had it all figured out. The life of pleasing God had been finely tuned, or so they thought. Jesus came along and started changing things. Because here is what you need to know about Jesus. Jesus changes everything. We sing that song, "Oh Happy Day," and in there is that line, "You have changed me." Jesus changes everything. Jesus changes, or should change, the way we think. Jesus should change the way we act. He changes the way we love, and he changes the way we give. Jesus changes everything, and I have no problem telling you. Not that we are perfect, and we'll talk about that here in just a little bit. But if you have not changed the way you live, if you have not changed the way you love, if you have not changed your thinking and your attitude and what you do, then you need to think about whether or not you actually have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, because Jesus changes everything about the way we live. He has to. You cannot have a relationship with Jesus and continue on status quo. If you do, it is just a lip service. It is a head knowledge, and it is not a heart knowledge. The religious people of Jesus' day had it all figured out. Just what they could and could not do. What was required of them and where to draw the line. They knew how far they could go and still be right with God. They were rule followers. And I would get along well with the Pharisees of the day, because I am by nature a rule follower. You know, there are some people that kind of go through life and they just love kicking the walls. They just love trying to, they live their life trying to figure out how they can break the rules. Not because they're bad or sinister, but they just can't live in these boxes. I love living in the box. I just will tell you, that's my nature. I am a, you can't do that type of guy, because it says right here. And some of you are saying, "Oh, well, I forgot to read that part." Conveniently. You know? And so I get where they're coming from. They knew how far they could go and still be right with God. Perhaps you've heard the term legalism in a religious context. Legalism is following a list of rules and regulations, a list of do's and don'ts. If you love God, and if you are a Christian, and if you are a churchgoer, then you will do this, and do this, and do this, and do this. And oh, by the way, you don't do this, you don't do this, you don't do this, you don't do this. And sometimes it even affects the way we worship God. The religious people of Jesus' day had that all figured out. And so do many people today, don't they? Loving and living for Jesus, for them, can be reduced to a list of standards. But Jesus comes to change all that, and he addresses many of those rules and regulations head on in his Sermon on the Mount. And while we're not looking at the entirety of the Sermon on the Mount, many of the famous sayings of Jesus come from Matthew 5, 6, and 7, or Luke chapter 6, verses 16 through about 38, a condensed version of the Sermon on the Mount. And he does this by clearing up some issues. He addresses some hearsay in his Sermon on the Mount. Now, we all know what hearsay is. Hearsay is part truth and part fiction, right? Hearsay never has an authority. It's just something we hear, and we just kind of go with it because someone else said it. We just get enough of the story, but we don't get all of the story. And so Jesus says there in Matthew chapter 5, beginning in verse 38, "You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth." Oh, and in America, we love that. We call it tit for tat. We call it get even. Or more of the American way, get ahead. Right? And Jesus is pulling this statement out of the Mosaic Law. It goes all the way back to Exodus, the book of Exodus. For my pastors, pals who are listening and taking notes, it goes back to the book of Exodus, chapter 21, verse 24, in fact. The Mosaic Law says an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. You give them what they, you take what they took. You take what they took, and we like that. But Jesus goes beyond that, and he says, but I am telling you. You see, Jesus came to fulfill the law and the prophets. He was the embodiment of that. So while Jesus says, you may have heard it said, I'm telling you now to turn the other cheek, to go the second mile, to give to the one who wants or needs or wants to borrow. You know, when Jesus says, you have heard that it was said an eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth, but I tell you, don't resist an evildoer. On the contrary, if someone slaps you on the right cheek, turn the other. You know, there isn't that a horrible sound? Yeah. There is nothing as humiliating as a slap. Right? But Jesus, many Bible scholars don't believe that Jesus wasn't talking about an open-handed face slap. Instead, they were talking about something much more humiliating, which was a backhanded slap from a right-handed person on the left side of the face. And so what Jesus says is turn the other cheek. Make it difficult. Diffuse the situation. But that's not the American way. You slap me, I'm going to slap back. Or worse, yes. Turn the other cheek. And so it was considered much more of an insult than simply an open-handed slap. So if we turn the other cheek, that diffuses the situation, or at least that should be our aim rather than striking back. But again, we have to be careful, because I know how our minds work, and God knows how our minds work as well. Because if we are not careful, we hear what Jesus says, and we can run off the deep end. Remember, a couple weeks ago, Jesus said that as he sends us out, we need to be shrewd as serpents and gentle as doves. Don't instigate. Don't be hostile. In other words, don't provoke. Be wise and sensible. So Jesus does not expect, hear me loud and clear, and hear what Jesus is not telling us. Jesus is not telling us to be a punching bag. You can only take it literal so far. He's not telling us to stand there and be a punching bag. To remove ourselves from harm and danger is often the wise and the right and the godly thing to do. But what Jesus is getting at here is don't seek revenge. As followers of Jesus Christ, we are not to have an attitude of, you did this to me, so I am going to do this to you. That is not the way we are to live. Because our forgiveness goes above and beyond. And here's why. Our forgiveness goes above and beyond because the forgiveness of Jesus Christ went above and beyond. Remember, Peter tried this with Jesus. Peter said, Lord, how many times should I forgive my brother? Seven? And Jesus said, no, 70 times seven. Oh, okay, so here it is. Here's the rule follower. This is the minimum. Oh, so 490 times I need to forgive my brother. To say nothing of my enemy, but my brother. Peter was very specific. Peter didn't want to know about forgiving people in general. He wanted to know about forgiving my brother. And so Jesus uses hyperbole, and he says, it's not about 490 times. He says, you forgive as long as you need to forgive. and as often as you need to forgive. And here's why. Because Jesus forgives and forgives and forgives and forgives. And we could go on and on and on. There is no need, there is no end to the forgiveness of Jesus to those who truly repent, and there should be no end to our forgiveness to those who are truly sorry. And then Jesus says for us to go a second mile. He says, don't just turn the other cheek, but he says, go the second mile. Well, what is that all about? The Jews of Jesus' day lived under Roman rule. That's no secret. That's historical fact. The Jews of Jesus' day lived under Roman rule, and they were dominated by Roman culture. And it was a Roman law, which the Romans loved to practice, that if a Roman soldier was on his way to wherever, that he could call up any Jewish man or boy and say, I want you to carry my load. I want you to carry my pack. I want you to carry my equipment. And by law, they had to go a mile and carry their equipment. But at the end of the mile, they were released. Now you can just imagine how this plays out. This was a widely used and a widely known Roman rule. And so guess what happens when a Roman soldier is having a Jewish citizen carry his pack for a mile? What happens when they get towards the end of the mile? Everyone else scatters. Because you might just be called to carry it the next mile. And that's kind of how it worked. You saw a Roman soldier coming along the road with a Jewish citizen walking anywhere near him, then you better make hightail it out there and hide because you're going to be next. And so imagine what it was. Imagine the surprise on the soldier's face when nearing the end of the mile, the Jewish boy or Jewish man turns and says, oh no, it's okay. I'll go a second mile. What? Yeah. That just wasn't heard of. See, Jesus turns the whole situation around. To hear those words, don't worry, I'll carry it further still. And again, the intent of Jesus is not okay, go the second mile and then you're done. That's how we look at it. Well, I've gone the second mile. No, Jesus is saying, go as far as you need to go. Go as far as you can go, is what Jesus is saying. Because here's the thing. The law of Jesus, the law of the Christian, the law of love is always over and above. Over and above. In everything we do, it's over and above. Not minimal, but over and above. You see, the world is looking for just what it has to do. You work with some people like that. They do just what they have to do. And nothing more. You live with people like that. They do just enough. Just what they have to do. But the law of love and the law of Jesus is, if you are a follower of Jesus, is to be all about over and above. In our relationships, in our jobs, in our homes, in our schools, in our society. We are not looking for what is the least amount I can do, but what is the most and best I can do? What is the most and best I can do? That's what Jesus is getting at. You see, Christians are to be and then some people. Remember back when I was walking through the book of Genesis, remember the Rebecca principle? Rebecca watered 10 camels. I water all of your camels. The Bible says she watered his camels and then some. That's the life of a believer. To go above and beyond and then some. And what is interesting in this passage, listen again to what Jesus says. He says, as for the one who wants, and if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him too. The interesting, you know what Jesus doesn't say here? Jesus doesn't say, and if a soldier wants you to go 1 mile, go with him too. But everybody knew what Jesus was talking about. Everyone knew that Jesus was referencing the law of the Roman soldier. But what's interesting, what's interesting here is that Jesus doesn't say the Roman soldier. Jesus says anyone. And you know what he means by anyone? Anyone. Imagine that. Jesus doesn't mince words. He doesn't say the people you like. In fact, he's going to clear that up just in case we don't get it. When Jesus said anyone, he meant anyone. Not just the Roman soldier may ask of you, but what anyone may ask of you. And he continues the thought with saying to give to the one who asks of you and don't turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. How do we reconcile this with so many great needs in our world? Jesus says, go the second mile for anyone. And how do we reconcile that? The great needs here in Texas City. The great needs in our state, the great needs in our country, the great needs in our world. How do we reconcile that? How do we reconcile with the needs in our families and in our homes and in our communities and in our churches even? How do we reconcile that? Listen, we cannot give every time to every person and to meet every need. And Jesus is not asking us to give what we don't have. So we can't give every time to every person to meet every need. But we can give sometimes to some people to fulfill some needs. That we can do. And by the way, beginning next Sunday, we will have our baby bottles from the Crisis Pregnancy Center. And they'll be here and they'll be there, and you can collect, you can take this baby bottle. This is a way you can meet a need to someone that you will probably never, ever meet. But your change will change a life. And so next Sunday, Mother's Day, by the way, so you can all come for Mother's Day. We have a nice little goodie to give away to you as well. And so you can come and you can pick up a baby bottle. They'll be down here on the altar. They'll be in the foyer, and you can pick up a baby bottle, and you can do a couple of things with this. It's got a little slot here in the little plastic. They chain. They used to use real ones, but now they're hard plastic, so you can't miss. Oh, it even does have a hole in it. Well, anyways, you can drop your change in there. These are gonna go out on Mother's Day, and we're gonna collect them on Father's Day. And so you can put your spare change in there. Some of you I know have just written a check for it. However God leads you to do it, you can do it in your Sunday school class. You can do it, you can do it in your home. It's a great way to teach your kids. Even our students can do it. You know, just small change makes a big difference. And so you can take that home, and you can fill those up, and you can bring them back on Father's Day, and you will be able to meet the need of so many people. And if that doesn't interest you, I've got something else for you, too. In a couple of weeks is Memorial Day. And so on Memorial Day, we haven't done this in a couple of years, but we're going to do it this year. From Memorial Day to 4th of July, we've got things overlapping, we are again going to be involved in the military Bible sticks, where you can, approved by the U.S., These are military approved. They carry them in their packs. They come with a battery. They come with earbuds, and the entire Bible is in here. And they are military approved. Chaplains are begging for these because they are at a shortage. They are $25 a piece. And so that's another way that you can go above and beyond, that you can give. You can, we'll have a video that we'll be showing a little bit later, tell a little more about it, and have some testimonies from some military service people whose lives have, not only do these get to go with the soldiers, but they will also are sent home, sent to the families of soldiers who are deployed that are back home. They can request one as well. And so it has the entire Bible on it. And so for $25 a piece, you can purchase one of these. And they're it's sponsored by Faith Comes by Hearing. It's a very reputable organization that we've been involved with for a number of years. And so those are just a couple of ways that you can help people who are in need, that you can give something to someone to meet some needs. And one of our core values as a church is the value of generosity. Not just to us, our church family, but to the world as we give to missions, as we give to baby bottles, as we give to military Bible sticks. The point that Jesus is making is clear. Christ followers are to be generous people. And in case you were wondering, generosity has nothing to do with how much money you have. Generosity has to do with your heart and your spirit and your attitude. I can tell you personally that some of the richest, some of the most generous people I've ever known have been some of the poorest people I've ever known. And conversely, some of the stingiest people I've ever known have been some of the most wealthy people I've ever known. So don't get sideways. It's not about how much money you have. It's about how willing you are to sacrifice what you do have. Christ's followers are to be generous. They are to be givers. They are to live a life of sacrifice. And if you think about sacrifice, just think through God's word, what God can do when we are willing to give. When Moses gave his staff, God delivered a nation. When Rahab gave a corner of her rooftop, God brought down the walls of Jericho. When David was willing to give his slingshot, God brought down a giant. When a little boy gave his lunch of 5 loaves and 2 small fish, God fed the multitudes. God can do so much with what little we do give. Trust me on this. Better yet, trust God on this. You have something to give. Every single one of you. It may be monetarily. It may be a gift, an ability that God needs you to give. Every single one of us has something that we can give. And then Jesus went on to say something else. He said, "You have heard it said, love your neighbor and hate your enemies." And we like that. But then again, he goes on. "But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you." And we can do that. We pray that God will twist their ankle, that God will give them dysentery, or do something else to them, right? No, that's not what Jesus is talking about. He changes, again, Jesus changes everything. He changes the love that we have for people. When he says, you have heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy, that word love is the word agape. That's godly love. One of the inmates years ago, we talk a lot about agape when I go to the prison. Agape love is love that seeks your best interest with nothing in it for me, with not expecting anything in return. And the prayer chains that you sign, we bring those out, and that is a form of agape, to let them know that they are not alone. And the food that we provide and the cookies that we bake and the placemats that our children color that we bring in, all these are forms of agape. And one time, one of the inmates said, he said, I am absolutely agape at God's agape. And that's how we are, because it doesn't make sense to us. We stand there wide-eyed with our mouths open at the love that God has for us. And that is the same love that we are to have for other people. It's a godly love, a love that seeks the highest best for others without expecting anything in return. It is a love that says, I love you even though you hate me. A love that says, I may be your enemy, but you are not my enemy. That's agape love. And why aren't you my enemy? Here's why. Because I'm praying for you. And as I pray for you, this is the wonderful thing, but it's also the part that we don't like. Because I may be your enemy, but you are not my enemy, because I am praying for you. And as I pray for you, God may not change your heart towards me, but he will certainly change my heart towards you. That's why Jesus wasn't clueless on us. He said, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, because as you pray for them, they may still persecute you, but your heart will change towards them in the midst of the persecution. That's what Jesus was saying. That's what makes us different from the rest of the world, or at least it should. We are intentional about our love. Jesus said it is easy to love those who are loving in return. Or let's make it more to the point. It's easy to love those who are like you. It's easy to love those who believe like you. It's easy to love those who look like you. It's easy to love those who read from the same Bible translation as you. It's easy to love those who love the same type of church music as you. It's easy to love those who do everything like you like for them to do. It's easy to love them. But then Jesus says, I love the translation that Dana read. He says, even the pagans do that. Wow. Jesus said, even sinners do that. What kind of standard is that? To love those who look and act and think just like you. Anybody can do that. But we are called to a higher love. We are called to an agape love. You are to be different in your love. I am to be different in my love. And then the hardest of all, Jesus says, be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. And I scratch my head and I say, what? Has Jesus set us up for failure? Impossible, right? To be perfect as our Heavenly Father is perfect. This is perhaps the hardest thing of all, and leaves me with a sense of failure. It leaves me with a sense of hopelessness, a sense of woeful inadequacy, and a grasp at the impossible. How can I possibly be perfect as my Father in heaven is perfect? But it's not impossible. It's not impossible. It's not easy, but it's not impossible. Because the perfection that Jesus is talking about, that Jesus is calling us to, that word perfect, it's the Greek word teleos. And it does not mean perfect in the sense that we think of perfection. It is not talking about someone who never makes a mistake. I'm not perfect. It's not talking about that. It's not talking about the one who keeps all the rules, who dots all the I's and crosses all the T's. It's not talking about that person who is a super saint. It's not talking about some holier-than-thou Christian who can perhaps cast the first stone. That's not what Jesus is talking about when he's talking about perfection. No, instead, that word teleos, that word perfect, means complete or mature. Complete or mature. Well, okay, preacher, what does that mean? In that sense, in keeping within the context of what Jesus is saying, and that is the context of love, we can achieve that standard. It's not easy, but it is very, very possible. We can be whole and complete in our love for others, just as Jesus is whole and complete in his love for us. That is the perfection that we need to strive for. Not some moralistic endeavor that makes us better than others and somehow, and thereby makes us somehow closer to God. That's not what Jesus is talking about. The kind of love that Jesus is talking about is a dangerous love. The kind of love that Jesus is talking about is a risky love. The kind of love that Jesus is talking about is a love that hurts when we give it. It's a love that is open and wide and all-inclusive. It's the kind of love that says, for God so loved the world that he gave himself, and that anyone, that's the kind of love that Jesus is telling us we need to have and we can have. It's a love for everyone and anyone. That love is that love that is open and wide and all-inclusive. John said in 1 John chapter 4, verse 18, there is no fear in love. But perfect love casts out fear. It's a dangerous, scary, risky thing to have this kind of love for people, because it opens you up to all manner of abuse. It opens you up to all manner of mistreatment and being taken advantage of, but it is a love that God saw worth making for us and that we are to make for others. And Jesus is teaching us that this type of perfect, whole, complete, all-inclusive love is not a love of just words. It is a love of deeds. It is a love that demonstrates, as Jesus demonstrated it for us. You see, the cross is the greatest demonstration of love the world has ever seen. And he did it for you. And he did it for me. And what makes it hard for us to demonstrate that kind of love is because we're often not sure how to accept that kind of love. But that's exactly what Jesus did. He demonstrated that love by hanging on the cross. And he offers that love to you this morning. And if you've never entered into that love relationship with Jesus Christ, he's not wanting you to clean yourself up. He's not wanting you to live some morally pure, higher than average life. Because the truth is, we can't do any of that on our own. And we can't love others on our own without the help of God's love within us. And so this morning, God is offering his gift of love for you through a personal relationship with you, so that you, in turn, can offer that same kind of love to others. And I'm telling you, it will set you on your ear. It will turn, that kind of love will turn your world upside down. But it's not impossible. It's very doable. Father,